pass the popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh, yes, it is time to talk movies. Alan Adams of the Main Edge with us. Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everyone in the family. Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Hello, Al.
Hello.
How'd that weekend treat you?
Good. Yeah, I had a good one.
Nice.
Yeah, I didn't even struggle as much with the time change as I usually do. Well, it's sort of a we'll call it a silver lining situation. With all the wind on Friday night, we didn't. Stella gets anxious when it's windy out, and so she was up and down and digging the carpet and just being generally. And so we didn't get a ton of sleep Friday night.
Yeah.
And so when the time came on Saturday night, we just crashed out, and so we just sort of powered through. And things are a little off, as they always are when you make the time switch, but I'm handling it better than I usually do, which is nice.
It's funny you mentioned that. We were down at MDI for the drama festival Friday night, staying at the beautiful Atlantic Ocean side, overlooking the ocean. Every room's got a balcony. Unfortunately, every room had a balcony with rocking chairs and a couple of tables on the balcony. And every time I would start to fall asleep, the wind would throw those chairs against the windows or the ones next door, and I got about 11 minutes of sleep.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was great.
Well, I mean, it's not like you need to be well rested for spending an entire day with a with a school filled with drama kids. You're fine.
They're not high energy at all. Yeah, I've heard a lot of show tunes.
Yes, I bet you
being
did.
Being crooned in the hallways, but we had a great time. And now we're here to learn about the fact that when you weren't sheltering Stella and calming her down, you apparently were at the movies every waking moment.
Yeah, it's funny how it timed out this weekend, because our friends at Bangor Mall Cinemas, with a lot of times with new releases, they'll do one or more sort of Thursday evening preview showings, and when those come along and they're movies that both I and my lovely bride would like to see, we'll hit one Thursday night, and then I'll go to one during the day on Friday, and then we'll hit one in the evening time on Friday or Saturday. But we had a fourth one, which was a Netflix movie, and so we had finished our theater going Friday night, and so we were just like, let's see what this. This Mark Wahlberg Spencer movie is all about. And so, not one, not two, not three, but four.
Wow.
This weekend.
Well,
so
let's get right to it.
Sure.
Where do you begin?
Let's just go in the order in which we viewed them. Thursday night, I went and saw the new Pixar movie Onward, it's not top tier Pixar. Like, it's not, it certainly right. isn't going to go down as one of their best, but it's far from the worst. And the reality is like decent Pixar is still really good.
Yeah.
Like, it's still a really good movie. This one, the concept is basically, we're in a world of magical creatures, elves, centaurs, unicorns, wizards, etc. It's a world of magic. Turns out, Rich, magic is hard.
I've heard that.
Hard to do magic.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And so people without the sort of magical inclination start turning to other solutions for their problems, hence birthing technology. And more and more people begin to rely on technology, and fewer people engage in the magical arts. And before you know it, we get to a modern world that is very similar to our own, one with cars and planes and cell phones and computers and the like, but it's still elves and centaurs and the like. It's the typically high concept sort of Pixar stuff. So we meet this young man named Ian, played by is voiced by Tom Holland, and he's on the verge of turning 16. He's a very quiet kid, loves math and science, and is generally kind of a shy, introverted sort of kid. His older brother, Barley, voiced by Chris Pratt, maybe a better Chris Pratt than certainly a more entertaining Chris Pratt, maybe since Parks and Rec. Like, I mean, he's really good here. Like, he's a lot of he's clearly having a lot of fun. But his older brother is he has two loves: his van named Guinevere, which has a Pegasus painted on the side of it, and tabletop role playing games. Only in this world, they're historically accurate.
I love it.
They live at home. They're being raised by a single mom, voiced by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, because their dad passed away before Ian was born, and so he doesn't have a real relationship with his dad, and he's always wanted one. And it turns out that when he turned 16, there's something that was left behind. His mom brings this thing down from the attic and saying, you know, your dad wanted you to have this when you were both 16. And and it turns out to be a wizard's staff.
Oh.
Yeah.
Good to have.
I know. And they attempt to cast the spell that comes with the staff, which is apparently a spell to bring the dad back for a single day. And so it's a chance for Ian to finally meet his father. But the thing is, he doesn't really know how to do magic.
Hmm.
And inadvertently, the spell is interrupted in the middle. And what we get are our legs. it's their dad's legs. He ends at the waist.
That's not satisfying. You want your whole dad there.
Well, at the very least, you would hope it would start from the top and move down.
Right.
You know, the legs can't talk.
No.
Although we do find out that they can find ways to communicate. So what happens is they realize that if they want to complete the spell, they have 24 hours. They need to go on a quest to track down this magical gem. And we'll leave it at that, just because I don't want to spoil anything for folks out there, because, you know, part of the joy is the kind of the quest aspect of it. Typically beautiful, as Pixar movies always are. It's wonderfully rendered. The world is very detailed and packed with the sorts of, you know, background sight gags and bits that you come to expect from Pixar. It feels a little formulaic early on. Like, it's like we've seen this before from Pixar. The sort of, you know, troubled young person goes on a quest dealing with the realities of an absent parent or parents, all that sort of stuff. Although I will say, things turn around pretty significantly in the third act, and certainly more than overcome the issues that we have going forward. But that sort of, you know, sluggish start, I think, is part of why the movie doesn't quite live up to the best we've seen from Pixar. But the vocal performances are great. Like, the three I mentioned are all great. Like I said, Pratt is outstanding and clearly delighted to be doing what he's doing. Which, you know, I mean, he's not in a Jurassic Park movie, or he's not an Avenger, so he's probably pretty jazzed to be just doing something different. And there are a couple of other supporting characters. Octavia Spencer is in it as a manticore who once was dispensing the sent adventurers out on their various quests, but now has moved into a different line of work that I won't spoil because it's hilarious. And that's kind of it. It's the same sort of, I mean, there's some great jokes, some great lines. It got a little dusty in the theater, as it tends to do when you're watching a Pixar movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, feelings were felt and all that sort of thing. again, like I said, I wouldn't put it at the top. I probably not even top 10, but again, like, If you're the 13th best Pixar movie, like, you're a really good movie.
Yes, pretty
good. And that's kind of where we're at with this one.
All right. What's up next?
Next up, we'll go to The Way Back, starring directed by Gavin O'Connor, who also co-wrote the script, and starring Ben Affleck. It's the story of a once great high school basketball player who has fallen on hard times, walked away from the game, and is struggling with a number of issues in his personal life, and he is invited back to the old alma mater to take the reins of the no longer any good basketball team. And that's basically the back of the envelope explanation. That's pretty much what happens. Affleck plays a guy named Jack Cunningham, who is a legendary high school basketball player, which that might be the most difficult thing to buy in the entire film, because Ben Affleck is a lot of things. He doesn't look like a basketball player, but that's neither here nor there. He works construction, lives alone, and he's got a pretty serious drinking problem. Like, he's one of those sort of functional alcoholics, drinks on the job, has a constant cycle of beers going when he's at home. He struggles in his relationship with his family. Like, his ex, he's separated from his wife. Like, his life is not in a great place. And this is where he is when he's invited back to his old high school. The current coach has had a heart attack and has to take the rest of the season off. And they've asked Jack to sort of take the reins for the rest of the season. And from there, it's pretty much your standard, like, underdog, inspirational, sports movie stuff as far as the team goes. You've got the one really good player who also is, struggling to have his voice heard. And then you've got the womanizer and the guy who doesn't take it necessarily too seriously. And it's archetypes. Like, they're all, right, they're all characters you sort of recognize. But then it's, some more tragic circumstances sort of rear their heads, sort of unconnected with the team. And that's when things sort of get murky as far as how things are going for Mr. Cunningham. I gotta say, some people have voiced displeasure that this has been part of the conversation, but I don't think you can talk about this movie without talking about Ben Affleck's personal life. You just can't. And there are people out there, it's like, separate the thing, he doesn't need to have his life discussed in the tabloids. And it's like, well, yeah, but it is, and he's been very upfront and forthright about his own substance abuse issues. And you'd have to be crazy not to see how that's informing the way he plays this part. Because that's the thing. Like, in all ways but one, this is a, standard issue, formulaic, and largely forgettable sports movie. Ben Affleck is excellent in this movie. Like, his performance is outstanding. Mm. Like, it feels, because it's grounded in that reality. Sure. Like, he's bringing real things to the screen, to his portrayal of this, like, little things, like the sorts of things that only someone who has lived life as a functional alcoholic would know. And, like, just little moments here and there where you see glimpses and it's just like, oh yeah, no, he probably did this. Like, this is probably something that he has done. It's a phenomenal performance by Affleck. Kind of a downer in some places. We do have, there are some triumphs, but they don't necessarily happen in the way that you would expect them to happen. If Ben Affleck wasn't in this movie, I wouldn't recommend seeing it. But if you're a fan of his work, or you just want to see someone, find a way to sort of channel their own issues, their own personal concerns, into great artistic work, you should really check it out.
Excellent. All right. And what's up next? Are we Emma next?
Emma, yeah. I wasn't sure what I was going to think about this movie. I saw the trailer a couple times, and my immediate thought was, oh, so it's like, if Wes Anderson adapted Emma. which, don't get me wrong, I love Wes Anderson, and Emma is certainly one of those stories that is well suited to that sort of stylistic choice. And it is kind of like that. The director is a woman, Autumn DeWilde. It's her feature debut. She's best known as a photographer and a director of music videos. But yeah, other than the sort of, it's brightly colored, it's quirky, it's got like the old-timey font, like interstitial, like text, and like it feels like very Andersonian with the wide shots and the symmetry and all that stuff. But it's the sort of thing where it's like, I didn't know who she was when I saw the movie, and looking for stuff when I was writing the review, I learned, oh, she's a photographer, she's a music video director. This all makes sense now. I'm not gonna synopsize Emma. because if you don't know what Emma is about, for the love of God, read a book, people. I mean, the book's 200 years old. Like,
you had your chances.
Yeah, seriously. It's like high school, college, like someone somewhere assigned you Emma. And if you didn't read it, you know what? That's on you.
Exactly. I agree.
But I will say, Anya Taylor-Joy plays Emma, and she's wonderful. Like, she's incredibly talented anyway, but she's a really wonderful choice for this because there's something off about Anya Taylor-Joy, and it's kind of tough to describe. Like, there's just something a little skewed about her presence, and I feel like that's a wonderful fit for the character of Emma, someone who has sort of grown up in this sort of indulged isolation. The rest of the cast is weird in a exceptionally British way, and it fits just right for this kind of storytelling. Although special note needs to be made of Bill Nighy, who is awesome. He's awesome in this. Like, it just, like, he's one of those guys who, like, he doesn't have to say anything to get a laugh or to get a reaction. Like, he's just so good, and he's been doing this for such a long time that he just has this wonderful way about him. And when you put him in, like, a costume drama like this, just, I mean, forget about it. Just, like, you know, you could tell that that the director is just like, you know what, Bill, you know, we'll do a couple takes of this. We're just going to let the big dog eat. Like, you do what you want to do, and it will almost certainly work. And you just kind of got that sort of, almost, it's funny in a such a buttoned down kind of story, but there's a chaotic energy sort of bubbling under the surface that really makes it fun to watch. I've seen a ton of adaptations of Emma. Clueless is probably still the best. But this is really good. It's really good, and it's the sort of adaptation that will, I think, prove satisfying to people who are fans of Austin's work, and it will serve as kind of a fun introduction to those who aren't familiar. So if you are one of those people that I was just a few minutes ago mocking for not having read the book, this is a good starting point. Like, if you watch this movie and you like it, then you should probably go ahead and pick up the book, because it's something that I think will really engage you.
All right, and then finally, I'm curious to hear what you thought of the combo, the unlikely combo of Alan Arkin and Mackie Mack.
Isn't it weird that Mark Wahlberg's a movie star?
Yes.
Like, it's really weird. Like, as someone who
But he's pretty good.
He's okay. Like, it's like he's someone who's figured out his lane and very happily stays in it.
Yeah.
You know, this is the fifth collaboration between Wahlberg and director Peter Berg. And he's playing the same dude. He's the same guy. It's based loosely on the novel, Wonderland, as well as based on the characters created by Robert B. Parker for the Spencer novels. You might remember Spencer for Hire, the TV show starring Robert Urich and Avery Brooks. Loved it.
Oh, one of my favorites.
Yeah, loved me for some Spencer for Hire. So it was really interesting to know that they were going to make a movie. And I'll concede that it might be my own sort of prejudices towards the TV show. This movie felt like nothing greater than a 90-minute episode of television. it comes to a conclusion, but it still felt sort of incomplete in a way that just, that was clearly aimed at moving forward. Spencer solves the case and then another case comes along and then you have to, you know, do that case or whatever. In this one, Spencer is, he's a Boston police officer, who has to go to prison, for intervening in a domestic incident involving, his captain. He goes to prison for 5 years for assault. Where among his prison mates is I'm gonna put musician in air quotes, Post Malone.
Good.
Face tattoos and all.
Yeah.
He's in prison for 5 years. He gets out. There's no one left to support him. You know, he kind of burned all his bridges with the police department when he beat up the captain. But there's Henry, his old friend and mentor Henry, that's played by the aforementioned Alan Arkin. Who's a trainer, like a fighting trainer, and he goes to stay with Henry, thinks he's going to be staying alone, but it turns out one of Henry's fighters is staying with him. A large and in charge fellow by the name of Hawk, played by Winston Duke, who's great. Like, he's great in this movie. All Spencer wants to do is get his long haul trucker's license and get the heck out of Boston, because there's nothing left for him here. But wouldn't you know it, the day he gets out, the captain gets killed.
Oh.
And while he's a person of interest, they immediately pin it on another cop that they say is dirty, and they're just gonna wrap the whole thing up. But Spencer has suspicions. He thinks there's more to it. And so while he should be taking notes in his long-haul trucking class, he's writing things in his notebook about the case and why, and lots of question marks and underlining and triangles and whatnot. Yes, it's really it made me laugh out loud. It was quite delightful. And then he sort of starts digging and realizes that this is a conspiracy. And you don't know who you can trust, you don't know who you can't trust, and there's no way of knowing just how high this thing goes. But the one thing is for certain, if there's one person who can save the day, it's Spencer. It's
Mikey Mac.
Yeah. Look, this is not good. This is not a good movie at all. But I enjoyed myself. And I don't know, it's a combination of the sort of, there's something sort of gently warming about watching Marky Mark beat Marky Mark. It's like, oh yeah, you're the sort of sincere meathead who saves the day. Like, that's what you are in this. Great. And then you've got a supporting cast that's really solid. Like, Alan Arkin's great. He's really leaning into the sort of crotchety old man phase of his career. And Winston Duke is really talented, and he's one of those guys that I wonder about what kind of path he's going to be able to forge in Hollywood, just because when a dude is that physically imposing, it's tough, because the Tom Cruises of the world probably aren't interested in sharing the screen with a dude who's a foot taller than they are. But he's a really talented actor, and we can only hope that we get to see him in more substantial fare. The rest of the supporting cast is fine. Like, they're pros. They do what they do, and they do it well. And then we get to the end, and it's like, oh, so that was it.
When you say, well, I didn't pay for this.
That's exactly it, you know? And it's like, with things being the way they are in the world today, it's probably going to get massive viewership, which means we're going to get another half dozen of these. And that's fine. Like, you're paging through the Netflix menu. Like, you could make choices that are a lot worse than Spencer Confidential.
All right, there you go. A quartet of films thoroughly analyzed by Mr. Alan Adams. Thank you, as always, Alan.
Hey, my pleasure, man.
For seeing some of them so we don't have to.
Yes.
But overall, not bad.
Considering there's four of them, that's a pretty solid grade across the board.
There you go.